Going to begin a new sugya on Daf Gimel Amud Beis towards the top of the Amud. Last week's shiur actually was an error on my part. I apologize; it has not been posted yet. I thought I sent it. I just realized today I didn't. So I've been posting them so far weekly. So we never after tonight's shiur, I will put up last week's as well. Should anybody who was not here last week want to catch up? But tonight we're going to begin three lines down on Gimel Amud Beis. Now, of course, we've spoken a lot since we began this masechta about the number three. We had extensive discussions in the beginning of the Gemara and Beis Amud Aleph, Beis Amud Beis, about the requirement for three in different situations. When we require three, when we require one. Last week we talked about the possibility of two. But we have alluded to an idea that we haven't really fully developed, and that's the subject of today's Gemara. And that is, what exactly is the makor for the idea of three dayanim, three judges in the Torah? So we've alluded to it. Some of you may actually remember, even though it's been a couple of months since we actually spoke about this. There was nothing really explicit in the Gemara until this point. This is actually the sugya that deals with, how do we know three? What's the concept of three? Remember, dinei mamonos b'shlosha, gezeiros v'chavolos b'shlosha. We have a whole list of things, three, three, three. So the Gemara now, actually four lines from the top of Gimel Amud Beis, asks, shlosha minolam. What exactly is the source for this idea of three? Where do three judges come from? So the Gemara quotes a Braisa, Ditanu Rabbanan, V'nikra Valabayis El Ho Elohim. You may recall, I believe actually we did see these psukim which appear on the sheet in source number one. The Torah over here is talking about, the topic over here is one who is Toein Tainas Ganav. You may recall that a person is a Shomer. The Torah says, Ki Yitein Isha Riyehu Kesav Ochelim Lishmor. A person ask somebody else to watch something for him, money or other items. V'gunav yibeis ha'ish, and the items are stolen from the person. Imimaseh ha'ganav yishalim shnayim. If we find the ganav, the thief, so then he's required to pay twofold. That's the concept of kesa. Im lo yimaseh ha'ganav, if he's not found, v'nikra balabayis el ho elohim. So then the way we're understanding right now in context is the shomer is brought in front of judges, in front of a judge. Im lo shalach yado b'mlechas riyehu. And what is it that he is to state before the judges? And in this case, he actually has to take a shvuah that he was not negligent, that he personally did not misappropriate this whatever the item was or the money that was given to him. That he's not lying when he says that it was stolen. He was not a poshe in any way. He was not not responsible for its loss. Al kol davar pesha, al shor, al chamor, al seh, al salma, al kol avedo asher yomar ki huzeh, regarding any type of negligence, anything that he may have done, whether we're talking about an animal, or an article of clothing, whatever the case may be, ki huzeh, we discussed that as well, what that is, ad hu elohim yavod var shnehem, we bring the both of them, both of their arguments, right, the litigants appear before the judges, asher yashuun elohim yishalem shnayim l'reyeyu, and should the judges find this person who was claiming that it was stolen from him finds his story not to be substantiated. If there is in fact evidence that he himself claims it was stolen, but he in fact is the thief, so he's lying. Not only did he steal, but he lied under oath about what happened. So then he has to play kefil just as a ganav would. All right. So this is the parsha in the Torah, what we call toein tanis ganav, that a person who claims that something was stolen from him, but it really was not. So the Gemara looks at this particular parsha, this little, you know, it's three psukim, but very significant in this respect, as being the source of the concept of three. How? So back in the bright, Tan Rabbanon v'nikra balabayis el ho Elohim. Elohim in this context means judges. Harekan echad. So if we're counting, we've just counted one reference to Elohim. Ad ho Elohim yavodavar shnehem, harekan shnayim. The second reference in that series of psukim, which cites Elohim, is two. Asher yashiyun Elohim, the third reference, Elohim, harekan shlosha, divrei Rabbi Yoshia. So Rabbi Yoshia, the first opinion in the Braisa says that we establish the need for three judges, the fact that the Torah repeats Elohim, which means judge, judges over here, three times. So that's the concept, that's the basis, that's the makom in Torah for this idea of three judges. The Gemara then presents, the Braisa rather presents another opinion. Rabbi Yonasan Omer, Rishon Techila Nemar. He says, no. The first reference to Elohim, the first reference to judges over here, So that is Tchila Nemar. What does it mean, Tchila Nemar? That is needed for, that was sold first, that's needed for itself. Ve'ein Dorshin Tchilos. We cannot be Doresh, we cannot interpret in this, in the way that Rav Yoshi tried to, Tchilos. What does that mean? It says Rashi, Ein Dorshin Tchilos Laminyan. If you're trying to establish a halacha, in this case three judges, based on the times that a word is repeated in the Torah, you can't count the first time, because as Rashi, de legufei asa, de leboy mumchin. That first time is necessary to teach the din that mumchin are required, Elohim lashon gadol of rabbanus. Gadol of rabbanus. Rashi says that the word Elohim implies stature, it implies authority. So included in that is not just the number of judges that you're going to have, but the level of qualifications, the status of this judge. And so therefore, Rav Yonason is saying the first one cannot be counted. So Rishav Chila Nemar, Ve'im Darshav Chila, so you can't count the first one. Ella, rather, Ad Elohim Yadvar Shneim Harekan Echad. So now we have to go to the second reference to Elohim. So we have one. Asher Yashuun Elohim Harekan Shneim. The problem is we're out of words in this passage. There are no more. So he says, well, Ve'im Bezen Shokol. However, he says you can't have a Bezen Shokol. What does a Bezen Shokol mean? An even number of Dayanim. Right? Shokel, like the word, the skolt away, like imagine a scale. So if it's even on both sides, you can't have that. So mosif and alayin od echad, so then we are forced to add one more. Harekan shlosha. We're left with three. Why can't you have an even bezin? Says Rashi, towards the top of the page, the last wide line on the top of the page, the ein bezin shokel. Says Rashi, ein osin bezin zugos. You can't have a bezin which, you know, essentially an even number, in pairs. Doesn't mean only two, same would be four, six, eight. The tzarech l'chaimbo acharei adam lahatos, because we have to be able to achieve, to accomplish that which the Torah says, and that is that you should follow the majority. V'em yachloku l'chatzoyin in kan rabim. If there's if the bezdin comes out split, that they come out with an even split, so you cannot fulfill that which the Torah says. Now you may be thinking, yeah, but it may not work that way. You may have two judges who deliberate and agree. But still, Rabbi Yonason says, you can't have a Bezin Shokel because we have to establish a Bezin L'chachila that is set up in a way that we can fulfill what the Torah says, Achay Rab L'hatos. Now what's interesting about this Machlokes is, at the end, both Rabbi Yonason and Rabbi Yoshia, they arrive at the same place. Namely what? Three Dayanim. So if there is an Afkamina, which we'll see there is, it's not clear yet what exactly that is, because everybody's agreeing three, the question is how do you get there? So Rav Yoshia tells us we count Elohim three times. One, two, three. Harekan Shlosha. Rav Yonason says you can't count the first one because Ein Darshin Tchilos, but you can count two of them, and then you're forced to bump it up to three because you cannot have a Bezdin Shokel. Okay. Fine. So let's continue the Gemara. So now the Gemara says, Neima, let us say V'Darshin Tchilos Kemifugi. What are they arguing about over here? What exactly is the root of the machlokas between Rabbi Yoshe and Rabbi Yonason? Let's say that maybe bedorshin tchilos kemifugi. The argument is about this question: whether or not you can be doresh tchilos, meaning whether you could take a word in the Torah which is needed to teach me the etzem din, and then go ahead and use that as it also to apply to a number that you're trying to establish. In a sense, you'll forgive the term double dip, right? So whether you say you can do that or not. Demar Sovar, one opinion, namely Rabbi Yoshe says the Darshan Tchilos, that you can be Darshan Tchilos, and that's why he had no problem saying it's true, the word Elohim implies Mumche, but we could also use it to establish this number three. Demar Sovar, the other opinion, Rabbi Yoshe says no, Ein Darshan Tchilos, that you cannot be Darshan Tchilos. So says the Gemara, lo, the Kuliyama Ein Darshan Tchilos. Interesting, just a point to note when reading this Gemara, normally when the Gemara says something like Neima or Lema, to say, let's say this, and then rejects it, there's an obvious reason why it's rejected. Over here, it's a little strange, because the Gemara says, let's say they're arguing about Darshan Tchilos, and the Gemara immediately says they're not arguing about Darshan Tchilos. So it's a little strange, because it's not, what's wrong with saying that's their argument? So the Rashash points out, it's not on the page, but just to know that the problem is that we actually have another Gemara elsewhere, which implies that Rabbi Yoshi himself says they ain't Darshan Tchilos. So it's a little dachuk to say over here that Rav Yoshi is Doresh Tchilos because we know elsewhere that he's not. So therefore, and the Gemara doesn't spell this out, but the Gemara basically wants to lead us away from this conclusion and actually say, actually, this is really not what you're arguing about over here. There's actually a different, the root of Machlokes is a little deeper than that. Says Gemara lo, the Kuliyama indor shpechilos. Reb Yonasan clearly holds that way, he says explicitly over here. And even Reb Yoshia is not saying that you can be dor shpechilos. Amalach Reb Yoshia would say, this case is different. Normally Reb Yoshia would say, I agree. If the Torah says something and we need that word to establish the fact itself, we cannot go ahead and double dip and use that for the number. But in Cain, but if that were the case over here, namely, if the Torah was merely trying to tell us that you can have three judges, in Cain, or excuse me, that you would establish three judges, they have to be a certain qualification, in Cain, name a kra, v'nikra balabayis el hashofet. The Torah could simply say, v'nikra balabayis el hashofet, bring the in this case, the shomer to the shofet, to the judge. And we know what a shofet means. We have other times the Torah says, right? Shofet m'shotin t'tein l'cha. Now, the shofet means a judge. So, my el ho-elohim. Why does the Torah say over here, specifically Elohim, which is an unusual way of saying, well, the Torah says judge, shofet. So, shema mina. So, the fact that the Torah says it in such an unusual way, shema mina l'minyana. So, basically, we can conclude from here that essentially, we are allowed in this particular instance to take a word and use it to teach the din itself, namely that you need mumchin, as Rashi says, Elohim implies kedula v'rabbanos, and also we could apply it to the minyan, we could apply it to the number, because there would have been a more simpler, obvious, less unusual way for the Torah to say the same thing, namely just say shofet, Allah shofet, the fact that it says Elohim, so that tips us off that this is different, and therefore we can apply it to the number. Reb Yonasan, what's Reb Yonasan going to say? Because he came up with this whole other reason. So he'll say, no. Lishna the Amunaka, there's nothing unusual about Elohim. That is the normal way people speak. Kedah Amri Inshi, as people say, Man de Islay Dina, Bikoriv Legabe Dayana. If a person has a matter that needs to be brought before judges, so go to Dayana. What does Dayana mean? It says Rashi, Legabe Dayana, Itzel Dayan Haragil, below Itzel Hedyo. We've had discussions over the past few weeks what the difference is between a mumch and a hedyot and Yoshvi Kronos, all different expressions that are used to describe different levels of qualification. But the point that Reb Yonasan is making over here, and that Rashi explains, is that if you have a matter that requires, a hearing of sorts, if it needs to be adjudicated, so people say, go to the judge. In other words, go to somebody who's an expert. And the word Elohim really implies, it's a simple way of stating, go to somebody who's sufficiently qualified. So if Yonatan insists that there's nothing unusual about the usage of that word over here, that's consistent with the way people speak. People say if you have a problem, if you're trying to sue somebody, if you're trying to collect something and he won't pay, so then take him to court. They don't say you're trying to, go discuss it with your friends in shul. So you go to Dayana. Dayana, of course, is not the word the Torah uses, but the point of Yonatan is making is that's the same concept. That's the same word. That's the same idea. Okay? So that's where we are. So we have, again, Machlokes as to how exactly we get to this point, but Reb Yonasan and Reb Yoshua both agree we have three judges. What we're going to do, I'm just letting you know right now, we're going to go to the two dots which appear on the second wide line. We're going to read this entire chunk of Gemara tonight. We're going to focus on some, specific points, and then probably next week as well before we go on. But this is one of those Gemaras that it's just important to see the whole thing before we start tearing it apart and looking in a little closer. So says the Gemara further, Reb Yoshia lesle bez denota. Says the Gemara, is it true that Reb Yoshia says that there's no concept of a bez denota, that you don't really have, that you can have an even bezden? But because remember, Reb Yonasan insists that there's sort of a simpler way to look at this, namely that the Torah says you need two judges. It doesn't say you need two judges. The Torah alludes to us that there are two judges. We know from another pasuk, Acher Rav Lahatos, that you can't have two judges. You need to have three. And so therefore, that's how we arrive at three. But Rav Yoshi didn't learn it that way. So says the Gemara, why is that? Is it because Rav Yoshi doesn't hold that you need a bez anota? But Tanya, we learn in a brayso of Eliezer ben Osher, Rav Yoshi Aglili Omer. Rav Eliezer, the son of Rav Yoshi Aglili, says, Ma Talmud Lomar Lintos Acher Rav Lahatos. What does it mean when it says, forgive me, I should have put this pasuk, I tried to put the pasuk on the page, but I didn't. Some of you may have the whole pasuk in the Torah, or if you have a new Gemara, you have that, I do over here, I'll read it to you. Lo siya acharei rabim l'ra'os, lo sana arav lintos acharei rabim l'hatos. It's a difficult pasuk to read. If I'm not mistaken, there's a long Rashi over there on a Torah that tells us how it's a very difficult pasuk to read. But the basic, the theme of the pasuk obviously is following the majority. What we're zeroing in on is the fact that it says lintos achari rabin lahatos, which seems to be superfluous over there. Lintos, which means to lean, to go in a certain direction. Achari rabin lahatos, follow the majority. So that seems to be, calling for a drush of sorts over here. So matamalama, what does it mean when it says lintos achari rabin lahatos? So atora amra. So Rabbi Yosef Agli says the Torah is saying asei lucha bez dinota, that you should make for yourself a bez dinota, which means what a bez dinota means is an odd number of judges. That's the opposite of a bez din shachol. A bez din shachol could be even. Bez dinota means one in which you can always find the majority. There will always be a majority, assuming that all the judges actually render an opinion. If one of them says any odeya, so we discussed that already, that's not so simple. But if every judge comes in and weighs in, if you have an odd number, there will be a majority. So you have to make a bez denota. That's why it says lintos achari rabin lahatos. So how could you tell me that Rabbi Yoshia holds that you don't need a bez denota? Over here we have a braisa that says that Rabbi Eliezer says you do. So the Gemara says, Savalik Rabbi Yehuda. It's not a problem. So Rabbi Eliezer, but not Rabbi Yoshia, really is entitled to his opinion. Rabbi Yoshia holds like Rabbi Yehuda. It's machlokes tanoim. Rabbi Yehuda says, the Omar, he says Shivim. He says that there's a Bezdin of Shivim. What's the Bezdin of Shivim? What do we call that? The Sanhedrin HaGadol. The Sanhedrin HaGadol in Yerushalayim was comprised of 70 judges. Or was it? So that's the question. The Tanan, later on we're going to learn, Sanhedrin Gadol HaYisra Shal Shivim, the Echad, Rabbi Yehuda Omar Shivim. So there's a Machlokes Tanan as to how many seats there were on the Bezdin HaGadol in Yerushalayim. Actually, there's an interesting Tosus over here that tells us, in Gemara in Sukkah, that they had 71 in Alexandria, Mitzrayim, and they had 71. Sounds like golden chairs, which correspond. Right? Is that what that is? Kitzros. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Actually, corresponding to the 71 Zakenim of the Sanhedrin Gadol. So he says, if I'm understanding correctly, Tosso says we seem to have archaeological evidence that there were 71. What's this idea of 70? We have already documented in the Gemara that there was an archaeological find which indicated that in fact the number was 71. So Tosfos sort of dismisses this as being a raya because Hanu Mishum de Moshe Agabayu v'chein v'chol Sanhedrin Gadol Hashem Muflosh Bezdin Shloim in Achesma. That's not a question. There definitely was 71. The question is, was the 71st part of that Sanhedrin, or did he just sort of oversee it, sort of, I don't know exactly, is this sure, like the vice president of the Senate? Is that sort of how it works? I don't know. Think, what? Yeah, sort of like that, right? Okay, we could use it as a muscle of sorts that, he votes it, right, so that wouldn't be right. If he's needed, he votes. So it's Tafka, not a good muscle, but that's the idea over here, that there was somebody who, was sort of the officiator, the one who would oversee the entire Sanhedrin. First it was Moshe, later it was others, who were most distinguished, but they were actually not Menachesmon. So the fact that we may have archaeological evidence or other things which historically prove there were 71 doesn't mean that Rabbi Yehuda is wrong. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, halacha l'maisa, we had 70 judges, but there were still 71 something. Yeah.
What about the concept of
the
shuffle?
Oh. That's a very good point. So the question over here, that's exactly it. No, so we're asking now, how does Rabbi Yoshi reject the concept of, how does he allow Bezenota? After all, Rabbi Eliezer says you need a Bezenota, an odd number. So he says, maybe he'll like Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda says Shivan. So says the Gemara, Ema the Shamas led Rabbi Yehuda, the Sanhedrin Gedola. Maybe Rabbi Yehuda only says what he says, namely, that if even Bezdin is acceptable, he only says that, but when it comes to Sanhedrin Gadol, Dechsivikroi, because it says it explicitly in the Pasuk. Rashi says later on, you'll see how later on in this parak, the Gemara will cite the Pesukim, Esfalish Shivim Ish, some of you may remember that Pasuk, gathered for me 70 men, right, 70 Zekenim, Moshe Rabbeinu was told, so we have an explicit Pasuk saying 70. However, B'Shar Bedina, but by other Batidin, smaller than 70, whatever it is, a Bezin of 23, or 3, or whatever it is, so Lav Dafki, you need, I'm sorry, you can't have even. It's only when it comes to specifically Sanhedrin HaGadol where the Torah says So all these are asking, but what about a situation where you'll have an even split, 35-35? So the Gemara is not really getting into that question right now. But the point the Gemara is making is, we have a precedent from the Torah. The Torah states you have 70 judgments in Sanhedrin Gadol. However, we're not necessarily going to apply that when it comes to other cases. But Chitim Elosh Not, if you'll tell me, no, that's not true. We should apply it elsewhere. If it's good by 70, it should be good by the other ones. But it's not, but we see that's not so. Because the Mishnah says, Smichas Zekenin Ba'arifas Gadol V'Shlosha. The Mishnah says that there are certain things that require three, and among them are smichas zakenim. Again, we're not getting into the details right now. Says Rashi al Rosh Para Eza. There's a situation where the zakenim do a smicha on the on a certain animal that's being brought for the carbon on behalf of the tzibur. Arifas egla, the decapitation of an egla arufa. That's described at the end of Parsha Shoftim. These require a bezin of three. The Rebbe Shimon, Rebbe Yehuda says v'chamisha. V'armina, my time is the Rebbe Yehuda. What's the reason for Rebbe Yehuda who says five? Because it says v'samchu shnayim. It says v'samchu, that's two. They should place, they can't be one, so it must be at least two. Zikne shnayim. It says v'samchu zikne. So two and two is four. The ein bezin shakul, and you can't have an even bezin. So mosivan alein od echad. You add one more, harekan chamisha. So you have five. So, sorry if anybody's lost at this point, but the Gemara is just trying to make the point over here that we find that consistently the Tanoim hold that you need a bezin nota, that a bezin shakul does not work. You know, first we saw Rabbi Eliezer says that, and we saw Rabbi Yehuda says that. Now we see Rabbi Shimon, and we speak to Rabbi Yehuda clearly says it over here that it's not a question of three or five. You need to have a bezin nota. So the Gemara says it could very well be that everybody else holds that, but the Rabbi Yoshi adifah me the Rabbi Yehuda. But you could argue that Rabbi Yoshi is adifah means better. What does it mean better? It means he's more consistent. The Rabbi Yoshi is more consistent. The Rabbi Yehuda of Sanhedrin Gadol who the last lay. Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, when it comes to Sanhedrin Gadol, there I don't insist that there should be an odd number because the Torah says so. However, when it comes to all the other Petit Din, you need a Bezin Ota, an odd number. Rabbi Yoshi says no. B'Shabe Dina Nami Lesley. He says no, you don't need a Bezin Din Nota anywhere. So that seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara, which makes sense because if you go all the way back to where this conversation started, we asked, how do you know you need three? So Rabbi Yoshi said you need three because you can't have an even number. But Rabbi Yoshi didn't give that. He gave another explanation, as if to imply that you could, in theory, have an even number. How could you do that? So the Gemara says, that's Rabbi Yoshi's shita. He says that you need an even number. So that's very good. He says you can have an even number. So that's very good, but we just have one problem. One problem left, and this is going to bring us to the end of the sugya. One problem is from a pasuk. What's the pasuk? Again, Rabbi Yoshi is saying you can have an even number of dayanim. How can you have an even number? What about what pasuk? Acharon lahatos. So that's the Gemara's last question over here. Says the Gemara, what does he do with the pasuk? Ela hai lintos mayavidle. What is he going to do with this pasuk? Lintos acharon lahatos. Clearly, the Torah says you should follow the majority. What are you supposed to do if you have an even number? So he says, Mukim lo b'dine nefashos. Haba b'dine mamanos lo. He says, well, he says, there's a difference between nefashos and dine mamanos. Dine mamanos, dine nefashos, you require an odd number. But by dine mamanos, in all the, you know, cases that, you know, that we've been discussing so far, and truth is, I mean, arifas egla and smichas zakenim is not dine mamanos, but then again, it's not dine nefashos either. So we will allow a bezin shakol. However, the pasuk lintos acharon lahatos, so that applies by dinin nefashos only. Maybe we'll see Tosos in a few minutes, which tells us why it makes more sense to think that it would be talking about dinin nefashos. But the Gemara concludes, Ella, if that's true, haditznan, when it says in the Mishnah shnayim omrim zakai, the echad omer chayav, if two of the judges say the guy is innocent and one say no, he's guilty, he has to pay, so then the din is zakai, then we follow the majority. Shnayim amim chayiv, two say he's guilty, he's got to pay, and one judge says he's innocent, so chayiv, then we follow the majority. So name of the locker of Yoshia, what are you going to tell me? That Yoshia doesn't agree with this? So it says the Gemara, no. Afilu tamer of Yoshia, in the end, even Rav Yoshia will agree. Maisila mikal v'chomer. He will bring it, he will learn it based on a kal v'chomer from dinin nefashos. Ma dinin nefashos b'chamire, dinin nefashos which are so chomer. What does it mean it's so chomer? What's so chomer about dinin nefashos? We're executing somebody. We're talking about matters of life and death, literally. So if it comes to that, Amar Rachman, as the Torah says, Zil Basar Ruba, you could follow the majority. Dinim Mamadis Lo Koshikin, certainly you could follow the majority, you should follow the majority when it comes to Dinim Mamadis. So in the end, strangely, the Gemara seems to conclude that even Rav Yoshi agrees, Halach Lamaisa, in this concept of you should have a Bez Denotza, but not because it's mandated per se by the Torah, not because the Torah states explicitly that you always must have a Bez Denotza. He insists that it's only by the Dinim Fashos. But once we have it by Dinim Fashos, even Rav Yoshi will agree that we follow the majority based on a kavachomer of being a kavachomer by dinah fashos. That if we follow the majority by dinah fashos, kavachomer we follow the majority by dinah mamas. The implication of the Gemara seems to be in the conclusion, which of course at this point nobody would think to argue with, that dinah fashos is more severe, and so if we allow, you know, a certain leniency, if you will. Why is following the majority a leniency? Why would we call that leniency? Well, in a certain sense, it is a leniency that we don't require unanimous ruling. We don't require unanimous ruling, that the judges don't have to all agree, but if at the end the majority rules that that this person is chayv misa, we'll execute him. Well, if we follow the majority when it comes to the dinin nefashos, then certainly we can allow the halacha can say we can follow the majority when it comes to the imaminos, because, you know, so much less at stake. Yeah. There are situations where we do look at numbers and they're off by one. You know, like, you mean like when it comes Arbon Yakenu, let's say 40 Malkus, we know it's 39. Yeah, but that's not a rule. We don't say that whenever the Torah gives us a number, we knock it off. Like by Gematria, I think they have such a rule. Somebody sent me an email last week saying the Mashiach's coming this year because he had some Gematria. I don't remember the Gematria. You're probably not surprised. I didn't pay that much attention. But Tavshin Ayin Vav, he had some Gematria that something equals Mashiach's coming this year. So I started writing back to him, and I stopped myself. I didn't do it. But I started writing to him, but there's a rule by Gematria, it could be off by one. So maybe it means it's coming next year. I don't know. Maybe it should have been last year. Maybe it came already. I don't know. Anyway, I stopped myself because, some people really like that. Anyway, there's no rule across the board that anytime the Torah gives a number, it's one less than number. But it's true; it does say 40, and the question why it says 40. But we wouldn't say that 70 is if that's where you're going with this. That 70 is really 70. Well, again, that's a good question. Why the Torah says Arbayim if it doesn't mean it? That's a good question. I actually gave a drush on that a couple of years ago. I don't expect you to remember it. Certainly don't, but it's a good question. No obvious answers, but there's lots to talk about. The Torah may be telling us certain terms of the ideal, what the ideal should be, but we knock it down a little bit in that particular situation. And there may be other cases as well. I mean, that's Torah Shabbat Peh. Torah Shabbat Peh is basically the way we understand the Decode Torah, and, you know, it's not necessarily based on logic, and there's not necessarily consistency, but certainly when it comes to numbers, we generally trust them. Another question comes to mind, you know, coincidentally or not, we're talking about 70, you know, the Torah tells us that there were 70 people went out to Mitzrayim, but the Mepharshim tried to do the math, and, you know, they get stuck on the numbers a little bit. So that's also a question, whether or not it's exactly 70 or not. Yeah.
This might seem like a simple question, but this is the trouble since the start of the Soviet. Like, what is the matter of fundamentals, wouldn't precedent be established already, long-standing?
In other words, what you're saying is, why doesn't, when the Gemara says, how do we know we need three, it's because that's what we've always done.
But then they say, we bring the proof from a story here and there.
Right.
This is
the
fundamental...
Right, so the Gemara, I mean, the style of the Gemara, as we know, is to sort of take nothing for granted. And, you know, you may be correct that ultimately, you know, and there are times the Gemara will ask a question, or come to a certain conclusion, and then it'll be questioned based on a story. How could you say that after all? This is the way it was done here. This is the way that... So, precedent is important, but when the Gemara wants to know minolan, where does this come from? You know, and we can't just say that's the way we've always done it. Sometimes, you know, in halacha, in trying to establish a sense of, you know, minhagim, so that's an important concept. In fact, sometimes we actually find that expression, which means, you know, take a look, see what people are doing. And we look at that to have sort of direction. But over here, the Gemara is, you know, takes, and then it's not here. I mean, generally, when the Gemara says, no, when I want the source of something is, yes, sure. Right, the Gemara doesn't go well, you know, deep into that discussion, but the Gemara does not back away from lo the kuliyama in Dorshin Tfilos. Right. Yeah. No, the way a Kal V'Chomer works, that you have a certain din that applies by a, well, again, it depends on the situation. Over here, if we're saying that the assumption we're making is that dinim nefashos are more consequential than dinim mamas, right? They're more weighty. There's more at stake, and so therefore we would have to be as strict, if not more, by dinim nefashos than dinim mamas, right? Would you agree with that? Right. So if we find there's a certain leniency by dinim nefashos, we can kavachomer based on logic.
Because 2-1 is the leniency.
The fact that we follow the majority and don't insist on a unanimous ruling is a leniency, in a sense, and if that's true, as the Torah says that's true by the nefashos, kavachom it's true by the nefashos. Why would we assume that the Torah is talking about the nefashos over there? So I don't want to spend too much time on this Tosos, but it's very interesting Tosos. We'll look at it very quickly. There is a lot to talk about on this Tosos, but we'll go through it quickly. It's just interesting. This is the third Tosos on the page. Buki labadin nefashos, avadi b'din mamnas lo, right? The Gemara said that Achav Ram Lahatos is talking about Dina Nefashos. So Tosos Mishum, the Krom Mashma B'Dina Nefashos. Because the Pasuk itself, which I read very quickly before, seems to imply that that's talking about Dina Nefashos. The Chassid says, Lo Siya Achav Rabim L'Ra'os, that you should not follow the majority L'Ra'os. Now don't get confused by that word majority. Again, you'll take my word for it, but feel free to look afterwards. Rashi and Chumash, you know, there's a whole long discussion as to how you read this Pasuk. But the way I think the Pasuk is normally interpreted is, in other words, don't necessarily follow what people tell you to do. L'ra'o, says Tosos, the mashma davar shehu ra l'kol. When it comes to bad things, that implies something that is bad for everyone. So Tosos' suggestion over here is that the fact that the Torah says lo siach ram l'ra'o indicates that we're talking over here about something, a matter which is sort of bad for everyone. It's what we call like a lose-lose. The hainu din fashas. Dina Fashos is a lose-lose situation. Why? Because at the end of the day, whatever damage was done cannot be undone. Let's say we're talking about a murder trial, right? So a guy was killed. So now the alleged murderer is on trial. Okay, but at the end of the day, we're not going to bring the dead guy back. So, you know, it's just, the whole thing is rose. About Dina Mamonis, that's not true. Zuchus lozev, chov lozev. There's always going to be a winner and a loser. One guy is going to come out on top, and the other guy won't. And so therefore, it's not l'ros. It's not all bad. It's bad for one, but good for the other. Even though, later on in this Masechta, the Gemara has an expression which would indicate that the relative of a person who was murdered sort of benefits. There's a certain satisfaction when the killer of his relative is found guilty, is executed. But still, it's still not good, because he doesn't really gain anything other than some degree of satisfaction in his mind, a measure of appeasement, knowing that this killer has faced justice. But still, it's still ra'os. Eidim Zomim says, so what about Eidim Zomim? What are Eidim Zomim? That's when two people testify that someone committed a certain sin, and then we find out that they're lying. Right? We find out that they weren't even there, they're making the whole thing up, and we're going to punish them. So in that case, if we find out that they're lying, it actually, they could end up getting killed, but it's good for who? It's good for the other guy. It's good for the guy who was about to be, you know, who was about to be convicted and would have been executed for a crime he never committed. So if I am the... If I'm that guy who's about to be executed because of false testimony, so I'm very happy when my witnesses, the witnesses against me, are found to be zomim. Even there, so says Avgav, the mechid v'chadid mitzvah rotzeya b'kach mikom l'kom. Nevertheless, efshe the mitzvah l'kula b'chasha. It didn't have to lead to their death. They could have also been dismissed because of the fact that their testimony didn't pan out. Right? They're going to be interrogated by Bezin. Sometimes their stories just don't match up and they contradict each other, and we dismiss them anyway. There could be many scenarios in which a person who is on trial for his life is not executed. It doesn't only have to end that way. So Hilchos, therefore, says Tos Chashulei Raos Ki Mechadi Yedim Zom and Misa. Therefore, it's also considered bad. We don't want people to die. That's the bottom line. And we don't want anybody to die. Even the bad people, we don't want them dying. When they die, it's Raos. V'od Matzim Neimar. Okay, we'll stop there. The Tos is over here. I would rather hold off maybe till we see Rashi, and we'll see Tos together with Rashi on that last point. But that's Tos is explaining why it is that Rav Yoshi would say that the pasuk of Lintos, Arachim Lahatos, is talking about Dinin Nefashos, because it would seem in context, based on the words, Bosirach, Rabin L'Ra'os, Ra'os implies that we're talking about capital cases as opposed to money cases. What I'd like to do now, however, is share with you, at least start a discussion. I don't know, we're definitely not going to finish the discussion tonight. It's a really fascinating discussion, which can literally take us, don't panic, because it's not going to, I mean, unless you wanted to, but it probably could definitely take us many weeks, maybe even months, certainly months, you know, talking about, you know, a particular issue that, you know, that this sugya touches upon. So, but it would definitely be kedai to take somewhat of a general look at it, even though, you'll trust me, we're literally just, you know, probing the surface. That's it. The question is raised by Tosfos over here, as it is by Tosfos elsewhere. We're going to actually see two Tosfos tonight before we try to understand what's going on. But just to review the most important part before we see the Tosfos inside, is the Gemara concludes over here by telling us that we can learn sort of a Kal Chomer from Dinei Nefashos and apply that by Dinei Mamonos. Namely that we follow a role that the majority wins when it comes to Dinei Mamonos, when it comes to money matters. So Tosfos says over here, Tema, the Beresh Hamocher Peros, in the beginning of Hamocher Peros, which is the name of a parak, and Bava Basra, Ka'amar Shmuel, Shmuel says, Ein Holchim B'mamon, Achar Harov. Shmuel has a din, which is actually the halacha, that when it comes to money matters, when it comes to a dispute between two people involving property, money, so then we do not follow a rove. We don't follow a majority. So Tosa says, wait a second. Am I? Why not? Why no lo nelef b'kavachomi din nefashos? Kadamar hacha. Why not just say, of course we do. If we follow a rove when it comes to din nefashos, capital cases, of course we can follow a rove when it comes to money cases. After all, that's what our Gemara says over here. Just like we follow a majority of judges in capital cases, kavachomi, we should follow a majority of judges in money cases. So why is it that Shmuel teaches a din that's accepted, lahalacha, ein holchin b'mamon, achar harov, that we do not follow the majority when it comes to case of mamon. It would be kedai before we really begin to think about this to see that Gemara inside. So take a look at the sheet, source number 3, and we'll look through this Gemara quickly. You can see how far behind we are already. All right, it is what it is. We'll do our best. But take a look at the Gemara in Bava Basra Daf Tzadi Beis. The Gemara says the following, Itmar, Hamocher shor v'chaveru v'nim tzanagchon. A guy sells a shor to his friend, and the guy takes it home, and the first day it starts goring everybody. It turns out that this shor already was like a shor mu'ad. It was a nagchon, it was goring everybody, it was a troublemaker. Not the kind of shor that he thought he was buying. So Rav Maharezei Mekachos. So Rav said the guy could bring it back right away and get his money back. It's a Mekachos, which means it's an invalid sale. It was based on false pretenses. The guy said he thought he was getting one type of shor and he got another type of shor. Shmuel says no. Yochalomalo, the seller could say, L'shchita machaytavlach. I thought I was selling you something that you were going to take home and shech. Right? Shor nagchon tastes just as good as another one. I mean, it tastes the same. I had no idea that you planned on doing work with it, that you wanted to keep him around the grandchildren. I didn't know that, so I thought you were going to shock them anyway. What's the big deal? So Rav says, absolutely not. Shmuel says, yeah. So basically Shmuel says, you came home with the, you know, with the shor that's a knock and you stuck with him. Says Mark, wait a second. The lechsi, igaver de zavon lenachsata, ilaraja laraja. Why not just take a look at the buyer over here? Is this a guy who's normally buying animals for meat, or is he buying them to plow? What business is he in? Is he a butcher, or is he in agriculture? I mean, you could probably tell by virtue of the guy's business and dealings in general, because clearly this wasn't stated at the time of the sale, or there certainly weren't witnesses that could attest to it, right? So there's some question as to, you know, what was his intention when he bought it. So we can look, says the Gemara, basically how this guy typically does business, and based on that, determine whether or not he should be able to call it a Mekhav Tos or not. Says the Gemara, no, we're talking about a Gabra, Bezavan Lahachi Lahachi. We're talking about a guy who basically, he's always buying animals for different reasons. Sometimes he chefs them, sometimes he works them. There's no way to know. Okay, V'lechzi Dami Hecheninu. Why not see how much he spent for it? The assumption being that, what, a guy's going to spend more from an animal that he's going to work with than an animal that he's just going to go home and chef and barbecue. So the Gemara, lo, lo tzricha, the yakar bisra, the kum bidame raja. We're talking about a case over here where the price of meat became very inflated, and it was now selling at the same rate that normally you would buy an animal to do the field with, to plow with. So it says the Gemara, there was such a unusual market fluctuation that there was no way to tell, because basically people are spending as much as they would for one usage as the other. So says the Gemara, Yehachi the Mainafkimina. So then what's the difference? If he pays the same amount of money anyway, does it make a difference? In other words, what's his excuse then? In other words, he knew he was buying a shore, and that's what it cost for a shore. So says Gemara, no, nafkamina latircha. There's still a nafkamina, because there's still a whole effort involved in shechting an animal and selling it and cutting up its meat. There's a whole tircha involved in that. And the guy says, I did not know that I was buying an animal I was going to shech. I thought I was buying an animal to take home, and he was going to start working my field the next day. And now I realize that I'm stuck with an animal I have to shech. Even though it's true, I didn't necessarily get ripped off as far as the money is concerned, but I don't want to have to deal with the effort right now. Chef, in this, I want you to just take the animal back. So it says, what's the case of it? If we're talking about a case where the seller doesn't have any more money, so there's no way we collect from him anyway, so let him just hold on to the shore, and that will be payment. The Amrinchi, like people say, Mon mare v'shuseich pari afra. Right? That if you, that basically, if you want to go ahead and collect from a guy who owes you money, you know, hold on whatever you can get to, even if it's pari, even if it's like bran. You know, whatever you can get your hands on, keep, because the guy's not going to, you're not going to be able to collect from this guy anyway. So it says, Gemara lo sricha, the eagle is still looming in there. No, it's not about a case where the guy has money. I want to go back to the seller and say, excuse me, take this animal back and give my money back. He has money to give me. So here's the punchline. And this is the important part of it. Rav says, hariz emekach tos. Rav says, why? Rav says, excuse me, the sale is invalid because basa ruba azlina, because we follow the rove. Veruba l'radja azavne. And most people who buy animals, sure, in particular, they're buying it to plow with. That's the common usage. It's true that every once in a while people chef it for a good piece of steak, but that's not really the majority of transactions that take place, or where people take the animal home to work. Shmuel says, you may be right, but ki azlina basaruba bi'isura, but mamona lo. Says Shmuel, when do we follow the road? As the Torah says, acher ram lahatos, that's when it comes to isur. Now here he doesn't say nefashos, he says isur. What does isur mean? Isur means, like, case of isur v'heter, the classic case of rove and isur v'heter. I mean, there are many cases, but one of the classic ones, Gemara comes in the Pesachim, that's right, Tesha Chanuyos, where a guy finds a piece of meat on the street, and he doesn't know if it's kosher or not kosher. He looks around. So there are 10 butcher shops on the street, right? 9 of them sell kosher meat and 1 sells treif, or vice versa. So that's the case where you can follow the rove, right? And it's an unusual case. Nobody's ever called me and said I found a piece of meat on the street. You know, it was a kosher. But that's a classic case of rove by Yisrael Heter. You know, we follow, I'll give you an interesting one. I just had a question a couple weeks ago. Somebody's making a wedding, I don't remember what it was, right before a wedding, someone wanted to know, they wanted to wear a suit at the wedding. So two family members bought exactly the same suit. The same brand, same style, same make, same everything. Maybe it's different size, I don't know. One of them checked it for shatnez, and the other one didn't check it for shatnez. So he didn't have time to check it before the wedding. So he wanted to know, can he wear it for the wedding and then check it for shatnez afterwards? So I told him yes. But then I had him on the phone, and I told him, do you know why? You know why you can wear it? So he said, because it's the wedding, it's like a shasat chak. So it's nothing to do with it. It's because of the fact that there's a rove. The rove of suits that we buy today, you know, unless you're buying like really, really, really expensive, you know, custom-made suits, maybe, I'm not sure how much of a rove, it's probably still a rove, but I'm not sure. But the rove, I mean, anybody here ever have a suit that was found to be shatnez? I don't know. Okay, it happens, there you go, it doesn't happen too often, it happens every once in a while. So the rove of suits don't have shatnez in them. Which is why, get ready for this, that's exactly why you're allowed to try it on in the store. Because if it were not that way, what would be the heter to try on a suit in the first place? But I mean, who, why would you be? No, but the one suit didn't have shatnez. Did I say that? No, it didn't have. Oh, no. I'm sorry. No. One suit that, no, that would be a different. One suit did not have shatnez. So it was clear. I mean, first of all, society didn't have to check it at all. But that wasn't what he was asking. So I didn't want to lead him in that direction. But he was just asking to wear it before the wedding. So I wanted to make sure that he understood why. So there are people who have this idea in their head, which is not true, that when they buy new kalim, they can use it once before you have to total it. Right? You ever hear this idea?
Yeah.
Like some strange idea that, you know, you can get one freebie and then you have to total it. So that's a strange...
It's in the Torah.
Well, it's in the Torah, yeah. Go ahead.
By the, the woman that the...
But we're talking about Tzilas Kalim over here, right? So there is no such halacha. I suspect that this confusion comes about because there is a question as to whether or not you have to tovel disposable Kalim. So there are shitos that say that if throw away pants, you don't have to tovel them. There are different opinions. Everybody agrees if it's truly disposable, meaning it cannot be used more than once, you don't have to. What if it is, but people don't use it? So whether that requires tefillah or not, that's the question. So maybe some people say, well, if I would throw it out after one use, I wouldn't have to tefillah it. So that means that the first use is free. Maybe that's why people came up with this idea, but it's just not true. You're not allowed to use kalim, you know, before tefillahing them. But you are allowed to try on a suit in the store and wear it until you get around to checking it, assuming you're checking it already, because there's a rove. So then if that's true, why do you ever have to check your suits? Maybe you never have to check them. So we have a rule by rove, which is what? That we always have to try to be mevarer a rove when we can. Sometimes we can't. But as long as we can clarify when there's a doubt, we are supposed to do so. So that's the answer. If I'm in the store trying it on, it's very impractical, maybe impossible, frankly, in some stores, you've been allowed to go ahead and first take the suit out and dissect the whole thing and decide whether or not you want to try it on or not. They'll say, forget it. So it's not very feasible. So in that situation, you could rely on the rove and wear the suit. But once you take it home with you, so then you should get around to checking it, even though it's true that it's highly unlikely, because, again, whenever you could be mevarer a rove, we try to do so. There are certain types of roves that you can never really know. That case of the meat that's found in the streets, there's no way to be mevarer. There's no one's ever going to know where the meat came from, so we have to work with what we have. So over here Shmuel says, when it comes to Issur v'Heter, we follow Rov. When it comes to Dina Mamonos, we don't follow Rov. Right? In Holchem, Mamon Achar Rov. So that's the Gemara that Tosus quotes over here, and says, why is it over here that the Gemara says we don't follow a Rov by Dina Mamonos? I'm sorry. The Gemara says over here we do, based on a kav chomer for dina nefashos. If we follow a rove by dina mamonos based on this kav chomer, so it should work over there as well. And Tosfos is basically saying Shmuel should say, hold on a second, we should follow a rove by dina mamonos. So in this case, everybody should agree. Rav and Shmuel should both agree that it's a mekav tos, that the guy should get his money back, because most people when they buy an animal, they buy it for plowing. We don't follow rove when it comes to dina mamonos. So Tosu says it's not true. Our Gemara says we do. It's a kavah chomer for dina nefashos. Yeah. Of course you could experience. Of course. So that's why, you know, it's on that very point that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of pages that have been written. But what is the basis of that distinction? Tosu doesn't actually, on this page, Tosu doesn't lead us down that road. Tosu in Bava Kamma does. Tosu over here says different. The Ein Lomar says Tosu, don't say the dina nefashos gufayhu lo azmina basaruba baruba the leisei kaman abba baruba the isei kaman. So el baruba the isei kaman. What does Tosfos mean over there? So another just interesting background. It's good to know these terms. There's a difference between what's called a rov, the lesser kaman, and rov the iser kaman. A rov, again, means majority. The lesser kaman means it's not here at the moment. What does it mean it's not here? It's not before us. There is no way, we're not looking at actual number of things that we are counting. It's based on averages, it's based on statistics, you know, or circumstances that are sort of, you know, beyond our access at this moment. That's called a ruba, the lesser kaman. A ruba, the iser kaman, is where we have all the parts in front of us, and we're trying to, you know, figure out, you know, how the chips fall, and based on that. So an example of a ruba, the iser kaman, let's say when you have, a little milk, let's say, that falls into some meat. So that's the situation we apply rov, apply bittel. It's a question whether or not bittel and rov are the same thing, but at least conceptually, we can appreciate the idea that everything's right here, and or like the meat store, like the example that I gave over here. So Tosu says, don't tell me that's the issue over here. That by Dina Nefashos, even by Dina Nefashos, we don't follow Aruba, the lesser Kaman. That's not true. He quotes another Gemara later on, in Perek and Sura Moria, Mashma, the Bechol Duchtal Dina Bas Aruba, Dina Nefashos, by Dina Nefashos, we always follow the Rov, Kegon Rov Nashim, Letesi Aldan. The Gemara says over there that most women are actually pregnant for 9 months. Again, the subject of that Gemara is not relevant for the moment. You can take a look in terms of calculating for Ben Sora More, or Varuba, the Inchi Zatol, the Ibur, the Yarcha, or that many people, most people, mess up when it comes to calculating the Ibur, the moon. But the point is like this. Says Tosfos, clearly, this idea that we follow Rov by Yina Fashos is not limited only to cases of Ruba the Isa Kaman, even the Lesser Kaman. So we're left with that question, and Tosfos says, Vitzarach Loma, you have to say, the Ruba L'Raja Zavni Lo Chashiv Kihanach Ruba. So Tosfos, you have to say that there's a difference between the Rov that's mentioned, the Gemara in Bava Basra, when it comes that most animals are sold for plowing, as opposed to this one. Hilkach Lo Samchina Nahach Ruba V'dinim Amos. And therefore we don't rely on this kavachom over here when applying bedina mamnas. But Tosfos doesn't explain why there's a difference. Tosfos says you have to say there's a difference. So Paul said that already. Can't you say there's a difference between these two cases? So Tosfos says there's a difference, but you know it's not clear why. So there's, without exaggeration, I think there are dozens probably of explanations to Tosfos means over here. But what I planned on doing tonight, in retrospect, quite naively so, I don't know what I was thinking, was actually taking a look at Tosfos in Bava Kamma, in source number 4, and then taking a look at a couple of approaches in the Achronim. At this point, even though we technically have 5 minutes left on the clock, I think it makes sense that we'll stop here unless I have any other questions. Okay? Between then and next week, we'll pick up over here. You know, I usually say, you know my drill. You know, bring the sheet and then I replace it. But I at this point, really, bring the sheet next week. There's no need to reproduce this because we really hardly touched it. We still have a lot more to do on this page. So please bring the sheets next week and we'll take a closer look at the row and we'll have a chance with another Paul to really talk about why there should be a difference between row dayanim, a majority when it comes to dayanim, as opposed to majority when it comes to other cases. God, I forget. Rabbi Chaim Kashi, Omer, Rasa, Gadish Baruch Hu, Zachos, Yisrael, Lefich.